stop out for Men's Night at Dillon Brothers Harley-Davidson at 174th and Maple on Thursday, March 23rd from 5 to 9 p.m. Good food, cold drinks, cool prizes, and more. Visit Dillon-Brothers.com for all the details.
Kevin Kugler.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
There's Taylor Walls. The first pitch is low for a ball. You know,
way up high.
Kevin Kugler.
You know, John, I've heard that it's money they have and peace they lack.
Kevin Kugler.
Cats and dogs were jumping out of the sky.
Shingles? I don't even own a house.
Good joke in 1958 when you used it.
Kevin Kugler.
People will come, John.
They'll come for reasons we don't even fathom.
It is a moist night indeed.
Kevin Kugler.
Happy fun time is what this is, John Bishop.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kevin, sanity level is where?
Are you? Oh, right. I mean, here's the exciting thing for today, and I'm fired up. You know, we get the chance to relax a little bit this afternoon. Then the storms hit. So I'm cautiously optimistic that we might get a baseball triple-header tomorrow.
We're gonna
pass on playing on a decent afternoon. And right at 7 o'clock tonight is there about an 80% chance of thunderstorms after no rain for the entirety of the day. So I am pretty fired up and pretty optimistic that we are going to get a triple-header of baseball tomorrow in Omaha. It's not guaranteed. I don't want to scare anybody away. But I'm looking at the forecast tonight, and I'm thinking, boy, 80% chance of rain doesn't look real good. And so I'm thinking we may be kicking things off at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning with a triple header of baseball at the College World Series. Doesn't get any better than that.
No, it does not. So to you, what's more important, television times or making sure games get played each day?
Well, to me, I would prefer that games get played.
I thought you
that's
would.
Just, I will say this, for Louisville or TCU, I would guess they would rather have a day to get ready to play in a bracket championship game as opposed to turning around and playing one 6 hours later. But that's not my decision to make. I'll be there for whenever the games are played. We'll be there and call on all the action of the college. It's been a fantastic College World Series so far. I mean, we've had tight games, high drama. We've had animals on the field. We had a dead ground squirrel. We had a real squirrel run out onto the field. We had a bird fight last night on the mound that almost took out Cal Raleigh, the catcher for Florida State. I mean, this was a lot going on, man. No, there is baseball too. I mean,
and baseball and like home runs, a few of them.
College World Series. Wow. I don't know. How much more? I mean, you got all national seeds remaining. I don't know how much more you can want out of that.
No.
And you've got a series that's just now ramping up. I mean, think about this. We are 1 week away from having just crowned a champion. There's a week until this season is over. We got to soak every bit of it up as we can.
Have you ever, and it sounds like that's going to end tonight, but like, have you ever got a whole College World Series with no weather delays?
Not in recent years that I can remember. I think we'll remedy that thing. Well,
right. But even making it to like this is even pretty amazing to me that we've made it to Thursday and not had anything. Or maybe I'm just misremembering things.
It is. We've been very fortunate. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I like that. We had the hottest game at first pitch in the history of TD Ameritrade in the College World Series last night, 96 degrees at first pitch. That set a record. That was exciting. Then still had 22,000 plus show up on a night where, you know, you're boiling eggs on the sidewalk out front. Not frying them. You're actually boiling on the sidewalk out front.
Boiling.
And I mean, you put a pot of water on there, boom, that thing's going to boil. And it was an impressive crowd. Omaha never fails to disappoint when it comes to the College World Series. This city loves this event and has shown it year in and year out, cresting over 200,000 fans for something like 16 consecutive years.
Crazy.
Coming to the College World Series, it's the crown jewel of our sporting calendar here in Omaha, and the Omahans once again are making their way out in big amounts.
What's been the big takeaway for you? With you said it's been a great College World Series so far. What's been the prevailing thing to you? Oregon State?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, the pitching
has,
when you have control on the mound, you're going to win these games. I mean, it's just that simple. We've seen an inordinate amount of walks from a series that is filled with really good pitchers. And the walks, look, it kills you as a fan of baseball because it just, it saps the energy and life out of you and really kind of takes away your will to live as a fan in a lot of it. And so you, but you prevail and persevere and you fight through because something good's going to happen. Well, but what we've seen is the dominant teams, the teams that are the best teams here, Oregon State and Florida right now, they're the top two seeds that made it to Omaha with North Carolina, the two seed, not getting out of its regional. But the top two seeds that made it here are the two best teams because they've had good pitching, timely hitting, and they've had decent control from a pitching staff. The two most dominant performances are Fiedo and Singer from starting pitching standpoint for Florida. I mean, they've been terrific. And if those two guys are on full health, if Florida can get through a game tomorrow and win their way to a bracket to a championship series and have Fiedo and Singer on full rest for a championship series, if they opt not to start Fiedo on Friday, this is a team that can give Oregon State all it wants and more with those two pitchers if they're on their game.
Yeah, I guess right.
If Oregon State, assuming Oregon State gets through, and I don't want to assume that because I think LSU is going to give a much better performance against Oregon State than they did in their 13-1 loss the other night.
Yeah, was that one of those games like, I mean, not granted, I mean, you got to give them credit because they did it, but was that one of those games that just like, yeah, that grand slam came and then just kind of the wheels came off. Like it was like, yeah, 13-1 is amazing, but it was just like, you know, and that's the thing about baseball, a timely hit with the bases loaded and all of a sudden things look ugly.
Well, it was 1-0 going into the fifth.
Yep.
People forget that.
Yep.
I mean, it was a 1-0 game and I'm old enough to remember when 1-0 was a tight game in that game. And sure enough it was. And then things just completely fell apart on LSU, and it snowballed, spiraled out of control. There were some defensive lapses. They just didn't play a particularly good baseball game, to be honest with you. And I think Palmieri would be the first to say that. I mean, it is not inconceivable that LSU had gone 2 in the barbecue here because, I mean, they didn't play great in their first game. They were able to come back and get a couple of runs late to win that one. And then they get blown out by Oregon State. Now, they played better yesterday and have, I think, a little momentum. If they can get the top of the order going, and Kramer Robertson got a late hit, and I think that'll help spark him. He had been 0 for the series. If they can get the top of the order going a little bit, I'm telling you right now, LSU can give Oregon State problems. They really can, especially if they go with Lang again on the mound, as I'm sure they will. Alex Lang's legit. He's a big-time pitcher, and he can pitch them to a win and force a Saturday game between those two teams. So I'm not saying he will, but I'm saying he can. But look, Oregon State's lost 4 times this year. There's a reason for that.
Right.
They're an excellent baseball team, and it's going to be really, really hard to beat them 2 times to get to a championship series. They've lost 4 games
all year.
They're not losing a lot of back-to-back games. They're not losing series. They're just not, and that's what they would have to do in order to not make it to the championship series.
Go, Kevin Kugler is my guest. Go back to the very first game. I was so impressed with how Oregon State found a way to win that game. Like, you have the distractions of Heimlich, you get down, and they had every reason in the book to kind of just be like, ah, today's not our day, we're distracted, all those sorts of things. And from the outside looking in, you would have kind of, like, understood it. But they found a way to win. Like, what stood out to you with that game in particular?
Just the fact that, and really for that game in particular, and even for the first two games they've played, every button that Pat Casey has pushed, his kids have been able to execute this. And you know this, having both played and coached, that you as a coach can call a play or push a button, and it's a good play and it's a good call, but if your kid doesn't execute it, it doesn't matter, and you look like an idiot for calling that. Well, his kids executed, and I really think, Nick, that this is, to me, this is undersung. You look up and down this Oregon State roster, and these are a lot of kids who grew up idolizing and admiring the way Oregon State played when they won their championships in 2006 to 2007. You built an expectation in Oregon for baseball players. This is how we win at Oregon State. And these kids grew up watching that. I don't know how many times you read the bio. Had posters of this team on his wall and loved this team, went to every game they could. And they grew up in that. So 10 years later now, those little 6, 7, and 8-year-olds are now 17, 18, 19-year-olds
yeah.
playing with Oregon State in the system that they watched growing up and practiced and believed in for the last decade. It's a great example of how a system and a process continue to play out a decade later, a generation later, because kids watch that. Coaches watch that in state at the high school level and go, you know, we can play that way. So they teach their kids that way. And those kids now are of age and are back here trying to win a national championship. Now, you're not going to lose just four games every year doing this. It's a remarkable season.
Yeah, right.
But I really do think you see this with a lot of great programs in college that are built on tradition, that are built on a certain way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
The kids in the late 70s and early 80s grew up watching Nebraska do a certain thing. So when it came time for those offensive linemen of the 90s, they'd practice. Their coaches had taught them that way. Nebraska coaches have been all over the state teaching them how to do this. And so those guys came in, and that's what they did because they grew up that way.
That's a good point.
Same thing with Oregon State baseball right now.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way. That's interesting. Kevin Kugler's my guest. Kevin, I want to talk a little bit about Patton and the draft for a second here. It says Justin Patton a year ago was holding a Park Here sign at the College World Series, and today he'll be a first-round draft pick. I mean, you were at – I knew when I left that Wisconsin game, I was like, this kid's going to be good. You were calling the game for Westwood One with Austin Crozier that day. You're just sitting a couple of seats away from me. I guess what about the Patton story and journey to tonight impresses you the most or stands out to you the most as someone that has watched JP?
You know what's impressive to me the most about this is that in this day and age, we always assume that there are no more sleepers. You know, everybody's got a website, everybody's got a recruiting analyst, and everybody knows everybody's talent. That's the 3-star, that's the 4-star, this guy's this guy's that. And in a city the size of Omaha, this is a kid who truly was a late-blooming player. And an under-the-radar guy, a sleeper guy, if you will. And I just, to me, that's, every time I think about Justin Patton, I'm amazed by the fact that there was this sleeper that nobody really knew about or even wanted right away, ends up going to Creighton, blossoms, and I think you give both Justin Patton and the Creighton staff a lot of credit for him blossoming.
Mm-hmm.
But he blossoms into a first-round draft pick, almost assuredly a first-round draft pick tonight. There's no doubt he will be. And in this day and age, finding a true sleeper in basketball is staggering to me.
Yeah.
When you combine camps and everything else that is out there to expose these kids, that to me is the most remarkable thing about this story, is that we truly had a sleeper NBA star on our hands. And we got him for a year, basically, on the court, and it was great to see, but it's really cool to see from the story. And I think it gives kids hope, you know. Just because you didn't blossom right away and get a ton of recruiting hype as a sophomore or a junior, you know, don't stop working. There's still an opportunity. Now, it helps to grow to 7 feet tall, but if you are not a seven-footer, you still should work.
Right.
And maybe, just maybe, you blossom late into something big.
You see a ton of college basketball throughout the year, BTN, Westwood One, a few FS1 stuff. I'm interested. Even in the NCAA tournament, who was the best player you saw all year in college basketball? Was who? And if I don't know if you have someone that you saw in the top 10 tonight or anything like that. What does someone jump out at you as you felt like, man, that guy was really good?
Well, the Jackson brothers for me, and I mean, I know they're not brothers, but Justin and Josh, I saw them both in person. They're fantastic, and to me those two have such a skill. I really do think it's a pretty good college draft.
I do too.
I'm kind of anxious to see where everybody goes and where everybody fits, and I do think we'll see some moves tonight too, because I think there's a lot of ability to get a part and then shift it for a part that you want as well. I think there's a lot of versatility in this draft. But the Jacksons, to me, as I think back on my college career, or my college year, I should say, my college career, I didn't play at all. I was not anyone who was going to be able to do anything. My college career, barely able to dribble. But their college career, much better than mine. And I'm guessing that's what they'll have on the graphics tonight. Jackson, better than Kugler. That's a selling point.
So Billis really will tell us.
That. Yep. That will make Knicks fans feel a whole lot better.
That'll be good.
What's going on in New York. They're like, well, he's better than Kugler.
Gotta hit him
that's
that.
That's something.
Oh. That's hilarious. So, I mean, yeah, it is. I guess last thing, and I know you're busy. I appreciate it. I want to get your
not busy at all. I'm going, waiting for.
Well, I just know that there's. Yeah, you probably just want to sit in a room in silence and stare at your dog.
All I'm doing
that's
is strengthening my upper body right now because I'm going to have to hold John Bishop back from just leaping out of the booth
with
in anger
rain delays.
With the rain.
Yeah, that's.
He'll be old man.
You need to start stretching out so you can deal with that because that's going to be tough. I do gotta get your take on just. Just how the whole Keyshawn Johnson Jr. thing landed to you and what your reaction to that was. Kind of an awkward story, taking a leave of absence. He says he's going to return in January of 2018. Sounds like it was a joint decision between Keyshawn Sr. and the staff. It's just, it was a weird deal. I guess the floor is yours. How'd you react to it?
The joint decision thing struck me because it sounded to me like a phone call was made. And now, again, I'm reading between the lines here, so this is total speculation. But it sounded to me as if a phone call was made saying, he's not mature enough to be here. We are going to have to, come get him, basically.
Yeah, yes.
And Keyshawn said, let me handle this and let me spin it my own way. And so basically, come get the kid and make him understand that there is more to this and you're carrying my name and you're carrying a lot of hype. And I think this is part of, this is always part of the concern I have in the recruiting world is that these kids become giants. And for some of them, they cannot handle being giants before they've done anything. You know, they're for all intents and purposes, Tristan Jebbia seems very like a very grounded kid. He seems like a kid who, and I'm comparing him because they're both kids who came in early and they're, obviously from the same area. So he seems like a kid who's very grounded. But he doesn't have a famous name to him. He's just a quarterback who came in, very grounded, has a little moxie to him, and is seemingly ready for this jump. But it is a jump. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're an athlete or not. It's a jump moving from California to Nebraska, enrolling early in college, taking a full boat of college classes, having the freedom that you've never had before. Couple that with massive amounts of recognition and stardom and people being willing to do whatever you want them to do for you because you're who you are. If you're not ready to be able to have the intestinal fortitude to say, no, I got to go study. I got English 101 tomorrow. I got to be ready for that. Everything can fall apart very quickly. It doesn't take long. There's a reason the freshman 15 thing gets talked about with us mere mortals in the world of college.
Right.
Because when we get to college, we're like, we run them up. And, if you don't have the strength of character to say, no, I'm here to go to school. I'm here to do this. I'm here to do that. And he had it. This is not me saying, feel sorry for him. I'm just saying he had a lot of people who knew him before he did anything that merited being known. And that's a hard thing to carry if you're a kid who's not ready to carry it. And it's obvious he wasn't ready to carry it. So best for both worlds. He goes home. In my experience, these guys rarely return to the place they came from for a variety of reasons, because you A, recruit other players at his position, or B, you just decide to do something else on your own because it's a better fit for you. And so you wish him the best of luck, but it is one of those situations that it felt like a, if you don't do something about this, we will kind of conversation.
Yep.
And they did something about it.
Perfectly put. Kevin Kugler, play-by-play voice of the world. Good luck controlling John tonight when the rain starts. Good luck with that, okay?
He is going to just be so... If you want to hear an angry Ginger tonight, that's the broadcast to be listening to. The rain delay theater.
Kevin, good stuff, my man. Thank you.
See ya.
You got it. Kevin Kugler, play-by-play voice of the world. That was his answer to Keyshawn Johnson Jr. was just... It's how I viewed it, too. Felt like it was, hey man, you got to come get your boy, and they found a way to kind of spin it, package it, and I agree with Kevin. I mean, I put the chances at Keyshawn Johnson Jr. returning to Nebraska at pretty low. All right, take a break, wrap up the 12 o'clock hour. We come back.